you very much, Gail, and good afternoon, everybody. It's really inspiring to be following a talk like Greg's, all of the things that are going on at the local level. And in fact, I just want to see how many people have availed themselves of one of the other wonderful things about Denver and its Green Action Plan, which is all of those bikes that are just outside the convention center. I just came back from one. I would recommend that everybody who has, well, the problem is the weather's going to go bad tomorrow. But, you know, that's an aspect of what we're talking about, where we can combine activities, infrastructure that can help to mitigate greenhouse gas emissions. May not be the biggest chunk of the pie in Denver, but it's still a chunk of the pie, but it's also something that's good for human health and well-being. I first have to disclose that I also have no personal financial relationships with any of the any private entities or any entities that I'll be discussing today, except for the federal government, whose pictures I'm showing here. And what I'm going to do today is start with the institution that's at the bottom. That's the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, which is my home base located in North Carolina. But take it up counterclockwise and talk to you a little bit about what is going on at the NIH level, which is actually where I'm housed up in Bethesda, and then talk a little bit at the end about what's going on at the federal and interagency level. Some of this we discussed this morning. It's going to be a little bit of a different perspective, but to those who were here this morning, forgive any redundancies. So that's what I'm going to talk about. I wanted to start by, this is a diagram that we've all seen in some form or another, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about all of the different ways that, that human health intersects with climate change, both the climate change impacts themselves, but also the impacts of the things that we do for climate change. But I just want to make the point with this diagram that when we think about the activities and think about what we as the public health community have to get involved in, it's not just looking at both the very direct impacts of climate change on health, the changes in extreme heat waves, droughts, extreme weather events, and also those indirect kinds of impacts of climate change that we talk about, health impacts that are mitigated through changes in vector populations, in the impacts on infectious agents in the environment, whether that's salmonella, cryptosporidiosis, or vector-borne diseases. But it's also this kind of far right arrow that we need to also be looking at the ways that we can promote health optimally through the things that we do for climate change mitigation and adaptation, and at the same time keep our eyes out for those inadvertent adverse health effects, especially those that may be disproportionately distributed among the population, and ensure that we are not doing anything harming human health, or at least we are optimizing our policies to make sure that human health is preserved as we are working on these other issues. So I'm going to start about 2 years ago when there was an Institute of Medicine meeting that was held on climate change and human health to try to spark the federal agenda in this area. And a group got together after that meeting. It was led by Dr. Chris Portier, who was formerly with NIEHS at the time, now heads the CDC National Center for Environmental Health. And he helped to put together an ad hoc interagency group to bring the agencies together and say, okay, we need to be beefing up our activities in climate change and human health. We need to figure out what are our priorities, what are the gaps, pull the science together and figure out how we go from here. And the result of this was this document, which was released on Earth Day just this year. I hope some of you have seen this. This is kind of the starting point for my story. And this document follows a number of different kinds of assessments that have come out. It follows WHO reports. It follows US national climate assessments. But it does a couple of things differently that I just want to point out. One is that it organizes the discussion around human health disease endpoints. So instead of just focusing on mechanisms like vector-borne diseases or ecosystem changes, it actually looks at things like cancer, cardiovascular disease, stroke. It divides the world in a way that the health community, at least certain parts of the health community and the health research community, could enter in a little more easily than starting off with the environmental side. So it's kind of a different perspective. It also does a couple of other things worth mentioning. It identifies cross-cutting issues that are important across all of the areas of endeavor, one of which is the focus on vulnerable populations and ensuring that we both identify but also take steps to protect the most vulnerable, acknowledging that there are a lot of differences in susceptibility. And it also very explicitly incorporates this idea that it's not just the impacts of climate change. It's not just how a changing patterns of weather and changing precipitation temperature, et cetera, impact health themselves, but also that the different kind of steps that we take to reduce greenhouse gases or to improve community resilience also have their own important upstream effects on human health. So following this report, a group at the NIH convened the part of the research community in climate change and human health to try to develop what would be a first step for the NIH. For the last 20 years, we've been reporting research on climate change and human health that's going on at the NIH. A lot of that research that was reported was actually research that was looking at the effects of ultraviolet radiation. When the Global Change Research Act was started in 1990, that was the era when we were really worried about the ozone hole. In fact, that was more prominent on some people's minds than global climate change was in 1990. And so part of the definition of what global change research was about ozone and ultraviolet radiation. And so that was a lot of what was going on. And the NIH had basically no focused research. It had some unsolicited grants that, you know, kind of a hit and miss approach to climate change and human health. So this was a starting point to try to change that, and we convened the community and identified these five major research gaps, which is a focus on looking at climate change and weather variability, this incorporation of looking at the health impacts and mitigation and adaptation strategies, focus on vulnerability of populations, the need to not just look at basic mechanisms of climate change impacts, but also try to develop mathematical models and other tools to be able to improve decision making, to look at that from a kind of a basic research standpoint. And then lastly, to focus in not just on doing risk communication, but also risk communication as a research area in and of itself, to figure out how do we best overcome what are a lot of communication barriers that we all experience in climate change, the enormity of the problem, the trouble that large segments of our population have relating to it on a personal level. So these were the building blocks that emerged from this workshop. And at the NIEHS, we've taken these building blocks and used them to assemble a new program that's focused on climate change and human health. And this is really the first focused program that's existed at the NIH in its history. Its purpose, you know, the goals of this program are to provide this kind of a platform within the NIEH itself to try to cut across the institute, to bring in some of the people working in our intramural program, and also to provide a focus for our extramural grant making. It also provides a platform for us to coordinate research across the NIH, like we've talked about, and also across the federal agencies, many of whom have been doing great work on climate change and human health, like EPA, NOAA, NASA, NSF, and of course the CDC, to provide that platform for coordination. So kind of getting a jump start on this program, the first focused funding opportunity for climate change and human health came as a part of the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act, the ARRA funding that NIH got. And this just gives you a sense of the array of different areas. These were the five of the grants funded by three different institutes and centers of the NIH, looking at everything from heat morbidity and mortality to this development of mathematical models and modeling methods for a diverse array of health effects, asthma, skin cancer, and salmonellosis. And this was followed then by the NIEHS's first focused funding announcement. It came out at the towards the middle of this past summer, closed in September. I think what's most salient about this funding opportunity, we put it out with a fairly broad mandate. We wanted to look at population vulnerability across a wide array of different impacts. But what was salient, for me at least, was that, and I apologize for this acronym soup, I'm going to let you know what these different institutes and centers were, but we had 11 different institutes and centers of the NIH, 11 of the 27, signing on to this. So as a first opportunity, I think we were seeing what I hope is a kind of growing momentum to bring a lot of the resources of the NIH to bear on this problem. So we had the Fogarty International Center, the National Cancer Institute, the Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities, the Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, looking at cardiovascular and lung diseases, National Institute on Aging, the National Library of Medicine, and the Office of Behavioral and Social Science Research. So a nice cross-cut of the NIH. And that's where we are. We're looking to continue this program. We're going to have a new funding announcement coming out sometime in the next year, and to expand on the current one. And from there on, we'll see what our resources are able to allow us to do. What I'd like to do now is take it up one level, if you will, within the federal bureaucracy. Now that I'm in the bureaucracy and I'm speaking bureaucraties, and give you a sense of what's going on now with the Global Change Research Program. And again, this is a little bit of the focus of our listening session this morning. I've already alluded to the Global Change Research Program. This is a congressionally mandated program from the legislation, from the Act in 1990. And what is, I think, interesting is that even in 1990, if you look at what the mandate is, it's not just about conducting research, but it's also about fostering tools for prediction and, very importantly, responding to climate change as well. So the mandate from the very start had a role for societal needs and for science to try to help the nation respond to it. That mandate has been fulfilled to a greater or lesser extent over the first 20 years of its life. The Global Change Research Program is widely acknowledged for doing a great job on assembling the science on atmospheric science and climate change, answering questions like, is global change really global climate change occurring? And if so, is it anthropogenic? Is it related to human activities? Those questions have been well answered. There's been criticism over the years that looking at the impacts, helping different sectors of society actually have the science they need to respond effectively has been a shortcoming. And so we're in a process now of revamping the Global Change Research Program and finding ways to structure it so it does better serve those societal needs. I just want to give you some sense, walking away, the Global Change Research Program is one of those federal bureaucratic animals that looks different depending on, you know, what angle you approach it from. So the Global Change Research Program, in one cut, is an assembly and an integration of a lot of different activities going on among the 13 different agencies that are a part of it. So this is about putting satellites up into space and doing observations. It's about the modeling the Department of Energy does to try to figure out what greenhouse gas emissions will be. All of these activities that constitute global change research get reported in centrally. They get reported to the federal government, to the Office of Management and Budget, and they make this big, what's called a cross-cut budget. All the different activities that are related to global change research, and we report that back to Congress because this is what we were told we had to do. So it's this whole set of activities that total up to a $2.7 billion, with a B, dollar set of activities. Most of that is dominated by the climate science, by the satellites, and the large climate assessment modeling activities. But the Global Change Research Program is also about integrating and setting priorities and making sure that there's no duplication and that, you know, there's synergy among the programs. And that's primarily done through a program coordination office, which is about 10 people, that has about a $2.5 million budget that goes to that activity as well as some other things. So the actual central program is much smaller and less well-resourced than, of course, the whole slew of the activities. Part of the mandate of the Global Change Research Program is to conduct a state of the science assessment and report back to Congress and the country, what do we know, what are the gaps, where are the uncertainties. This is mandated to occur about every 4 years. In the last 20 years of the program, it's occurred twice, so it's one of those things that needs a little bit of nudging to occur on time. But we're in the midst of the third National Climate Assessment, which is going to be a process that I think the public health community has a very large role to play. There's other pieces of what is called the Global Change Research Program. It's also a subcommittee within the federal bureaucracy that constitutes principals from each agency that are supposed to be the conduits between the global change activities going on in a coordinated fashion at the federal government with their home agencies and to provide that kind of linkage up the chain. And then a lot of the work is actually done by these 12 interagency working groups that focus in on specific questions or sectors and constitute kind of the staff working out how to move things forward in a more focused manner. So looking back, one of the major issues from a public health standpoint with the Global Change Research Program is that there wasn't a central home for health, that there wasn't an individual health working group or health sector activity. Health was considered to be part of what was called human dimensions. And so these are the original, these are the 12 working groups that we had for most of the last 7 or 8 years or so. And you can see human contributions and responses, which was the home for health. George was one of the co-chairs of that committee. But it was competing with the other issues. There was a lot of good activity there, but it wasn't achieving quite the focus and the attention that a lot of people within the public health community felt would be valuable. And so in response to advice and recommendations that came from the National Research Council, from multiple reports, that came from stakeholder listening sessions, and with an eye to this idea that the Global Change Research Program needs to transition from focusing on the basic science of climate to meeting societal needs in a more effective and efficient manner, the Global Change Research Program created this new group that would give health a home. It has a long acronym, doesn't get pronounced very well. This is our CHIG, the Interagency Group on Climate Change and Human Health. And this is now the new home for activities within the Global Change Research Program on Climate Change and Human Health. We have the agencies that are a part of the Global Change Research Program, so we bring in the people who are doing health work from EPA, from NOAA, from NSF, from the USGS, which conducts a lot of work on human health, as well as, of course, the parts of Health and Human Services that have been heavily involved, like the CDC, like the Fogarty International Center. But we also bring in some new players, like we're going to be bringing in the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and we have the Department of Homeland Security participating as well. And we've divided our efforts into these 6 work streams, and I want to go through those each just to give you a sense of what we're doing in each of these in the short term. So one of the critical activities is to move forward on the research agenda for health and climate change. The white paper was a significant step forward in summarizing the literature, in identifying where are the key uncertainties, where are some of the research gaps. There are 152 different research gaps and needs identified in that document. And so there's a next step that's needed to say, okay, among those research needs, which are the ones that we're going to coordinate, which are the ones where science can really give us some results in the near term, where is the community of practitioners really telling us they need the uncertainty reduced the most. So that's one of our work streams. The second work stream, in response to calls for having integrated data sets that can help us combine the environmental information that's collected with the climatologic, meteorologic data that's collected and integrate that with the health monitoring data, that we have a group that's working on that and trying to, as an initial step, do a thorough inventory of the climate and health relevant databases across the different agencies that are part of our working group. This is going to be a public resource, and then the next step will be working together to ensure that those databases talk to each other, that the data are collected in ways that facilitate the kind of modeling and prediction tools that the public health community needs to be doing. Third area is our education and engagement. This is an area that has a lot of critical needs, ranging from educating the different agencies who are working on this, on climate change and human health, educating the policymakers, and educating the general public. But our highest priority in the next year is going to be, as part of the National Climate Assessment, working on an engagement strategy to connect local state public health officials, other policymakers at the state and local level, academics, with the federal research enterprise to develop a community of practice for sharing of information, sharing of best practices. So this is going to be our high priority for the next year. The other three work stream areas, one of them is adaptation science. Climate Change and Human Health Work Group has become the home for health within the federal apparatus. And so in addition to working with the Global Change Research Program, we've constituted the work group for another piece in the bureaucracy, the Climate Change Adaptation Task Force that President Obama set up about a year ago. That task force released a report in October that lays out a series of recommendations for how the federal government can start taking the next steps to move on climate change adaptation. One of the key recommendations that's in that report is that as the different agencies start setting up their own climate change adaptation plans, whether it's the Department of Transportation, Department of Housing and Urban Development, agriculture, all of these different sectors, as they figure out what they're doing for climate change adaptation, that they need to be looking at the potential health impacts, both trying to optimize the benefits, identifying inadvertent health harms. And so one of the key tasks for our group is going to be providing guidance to the agencies on what are the ways that adaptation plans can impact human health, and some guidance on how to do these kinds of assessments of policies. Fifth work stream, and I know this is a lot of work streams, there's a lot going on, is to support the National Climate Assessment. This is, in its third iteration, the National Climate Assessment is setting very ambitious goals for itself. It's not just about writing a literature review or another report that's kind of assessing the current state of knowledge, but it's really trying to create something that's much more sustained, that sets up indicators and the ability to measure long-term trends, which we haven't been able to do, both in terms of looking at climate trends and environmental trends related to climate change, and very importantly, health indicators that are climate sensitive. And some of the people in this room are some of the key intellectual forces behind how do we set up that kind of a set of indicators. The National Climate Assessment is also trying to leave behind it this network, this community of practice, that once the assessment itself goes away, we'll still have an infrastructure for sharing information, for being more efficient and effective in doing the public health work in the field. And then the last work stream is our international work stream, and the focus there for the next year is going to be cataloging what's going on around the world in terms of health adaptation, looking at what are the best practices, and participating, there are a lot of agency experts who will be participating in the fifth assessment of the next Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. So looking forward, I think I've laid out for you the goals for the National Climate Assessment, and I mentioned to you that the Global Change Research Program is in the process of coming up with a new strategic plan for the next 10 years and revisioning how it structures itself, how it lays out the infrastructure for doing a better job of supporting societal needs. And in particular, as we look at climate change adaptation, as we look at taking the science and making it work in the real world, there's a general recognition that there needs to be a lot more emphasis on social sciences, including economics, and also behavioral sciences to really make this kind of translation effective. So that's one of the issues for the new strategic planning process as well. So, it's a lot of information, it's a lot of activity. For this audience, what can you do? Well, there are a lot of ways that I can suggest to get involved. Like all good federal processes, there are a lot of opportunities for public comment. We are working on creating this community of practice, and I would encourage all of you to sign up. If you would, I'm gonna have some email addresses at the end. Obviously, for those of you who are new to the field, becoming more informed, finding those resources that can give you more facility in the various aspects of the various health aspects of climate change to educate yourself, and then in your communities, educating others. That includes a lot of people in the public health field. There are a lot of sectors who are really relevant who don't see climate change as part of their mandate or something that affects them greatly. So there's a lot of education we can do within our own community, and then of course looking at other sectors, especially on a local basis, that are relevant. And please provide feedback and input into these different processes as they go along. And like I said, there will be formal opportunities for comment on the strategic plan, on the various components of the National Climate Assessment. We'll be conducting workshops around the country for the National Climate Assessment, and we'll need representation at the local level for the health sector. And then we're most likely to have one of these workshops devoted to a national climate assessment for the health sector. That should be an opportunity for participation as well. So with that, I'll close. Thank you for your attention at this late hour, and leave you with these ways to get more information. Thanks very much.